Everything looks tasty, if I may say so.
I do hope the meat isn't dry, John. You know I don't like it overcooked.
I know, Mum. Don't worry.
If I'd known you'd be so late coming home from church...
Well, I can't always know how long Reverend Blanchette is going to preach, can I? It's not as if I can stand up and shout, "Pardon me, Reverend, but could you cut it short? My mother's waiting for me at home and the roast is burning in the oven."
Oh.
Please pass the gravy.
I only meant that we've been eating later and later on Sundays, and the meat has been drier and drier since you've been in this church phase.
Phase? Please, Mum, let's not be condescending about it.
Well, I don't know what else to call it.
Then don't call it anything. Would you like some Yorkshire pudding?
If it's not too much trouble.
It's not too much trouble.
Yes.
I thought you'd be pleased.
I am. But you must press home your advantage.
My advantage?
The enemy will be working on the patient from the centre outwards, gradually bringing more and more of his conduct under the new standard of his Christianity. It may reach his behaviour to the old lady at any moment.
Look, Mum, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to snap.
It's all right, dear.
Ah, you see? You want to get in first. Where is Globos?
She's hiding the carcass of a dead mouse behind the wall. She heard you were coming. Well, you do sort of make her nervous.
Rightfully so. She was never the best of students. In any event, keep in close touch with her, since she is in charge of the mother. Build up between your patient and the mother a good settled habit of mutual annoyance. Hmm? Daily pinpricks?
Pinpricks.
Yes, there are several useful methods to employ. Make note.
Yes, okay, ready?
First, you must keep his mind on the inner life. He thinks his conversion is something inside him, and his attention is therefore chiefly turned at present to the states of his own mind. Encourage this. Keep his mind off the basic humdrum everyday duties of life by misdirecting it to what he imagines are the most advanced and spiritual ones. For example, you must bring him to a condition where he can practice self-examination for an hour without discovering any of those facts about himself which are perfectly clear to anyone who has ever spent any time with him.
Self-examination. Right, got it?
Good. Second, it is no doubt impossible to prevent his praying for his mother. But we have means of rendering the prayers innocuous. Make sure that they are always very spiritual. That he's always concerned with the state of her soul and never with her rheumatism. Two advantages will follow. In the first place, his attention will be kept on what he regards as her sins, by which, with a little guidance from you, he can be induced to mean any of her actions which are inconvenient or irritating to himself. Thus, you can keep rubbing the wounds of the day a little sorer, even while he is on his knees. The operation is not at all difficult.
Yeah, and I do find it rather entertaining.
It is, believe me. In the second place, since his ideas about her soul will be very crude and often erroneous, he will, in some degree, be praying for an imaginary person. It will be your task to make that imaginary person daily less and less like the real mother, the sharp-tongued old lady at the table. In time, you may get the rift so wide that no thought or feeling from his prayers for the imagined mother will ever flow over into his treatment of the real one.
Brilliant.
Ah, I know. Now, when two humans have lived together for many years, it usually happens that each has tones of voice and expressions of face which are most unendurably irritating to the other. Work on that. Bring fully into the consciousness of your patient that particular lift at the old mother's eyebrows which he learned to dislike as a child, and let him think, oh, how much he dislikes it. Let him assume that she also knows how annoying it is and does it to annoy.
I know the kind of thing. You leave it to me.
And of course, never let him suspect that he has tones and looks which similarly annoy her. As he cannot see or hear himself, this is very easily managed.
Very easily managed.
Third, In civilized life, domestic hatred usually expresses itself by saying things which would appear quite harmless on paper. The words, in and of themselves, are not offensive, but... Take those words, the same words, and apply a particular tone of voice at a particular moment, and they are not far short of a blow in the face, delivered with the utmost innocence. Your patient then is able to take offense at something his mother says, while she does the same on the other end. It is a remarkable double standard which you and Glubos must maintain.
Maintained in what way?
Well, your patient must demand that all his own utterances are to be taken at their face value and judged simply on the actual words, while at the same time judging all his mother's utterances with the fullest and most oversensitive interpretation of that tone and the context and the suspected intention.
Right.
She must be encouraged to do the same to him. Hence, from every quarrel, they can both go away convinced, or very nearly convinced, that they are quite innocent.
I know the sort of thing you mean. He thinks, I simply ask her what time dinner will be and she flies into a temper.
Precisely.
Yes.
Once this habit is very well established, you will have the delightful situation of a human saying things with the express purpose of offending and yet having a grievance when offence is taken.
Delightful.
Finally, tell me something about the old lady's religious position. Is she at all jealous of the new factor in her son's life? At all piqued that he should have learned from others and so late what she considers she gave him such good opportunity of learning in childhood? Does she feel he is making a great deal of fuss about it, or that he's getting in on very easy terms? Remember the elder brother in the enemy story they call the prodigal son?
Right. I'll speak with Glubos.
Then, if you don't bungle it, you should have this situation well in hand.